Chapter 23. Molly fished the key out on its loop of nylon.
"You know," 3Jane said, craning forward with interest, "I was under the impression that no duplicate existed. I sent Hideo to search my father's things after you killed him. He couldn't find the original."
"Wintermute managed to get it stuck in the back of a drawer," Molly said, carefully inserting the Chubb key's cylindrical shaft into the notched opening in the face of the blank, rectangular door. "He killed the little kid who put it there." The key rotated smoothly when she tried it.
"The head," Case said. "There's a panel in the back of the head. Zircon's on it. Get it off. That's where I'm jacking in."
And then they were inside.
"Crashed on a crutch," the flatline drawled. "You do believe in taking your own good time, don't you, boy?"
"Quang's ready?"
"Hot to trot."
"Okay." He flipped, and found himself staring down, through Molly's one good eye, at a white-faced, wasted figure, afloat in a loose fetal crouch, a cyberspace deck between its thighs, a band of silver trodes above closed, shadowed eyes. The man's cheeks were hollowed with a day's growth of dark beard, his face slick with sweat. He was looking at himself. Molly had her Fletcher in her hand. Her leg throbbed with each beat of her pulse, but she could still maneuver in zero-G. Malcolm drifted nearby, 3Jane's thin arm gripped in a large brown hand. A ribbon of fiber optics looped gracefully from the Ono Sendai to a square opening in the back of the pearl-crusted terminal. He tapped the switch again.
"Quang grade Mark 11 is hauling ass in 9 seconds, counting. 7, 6, 5.
The flatline punched them up, smooth ascent, the ventral surface of the black chrome shark a microsecond flick of darkness.
4, 3.
Case had the strange impression of being in the pilot's seat in a small plane. A flat, dark surface in front of him suddenly glowed with a perfect reproduction of the keyboard of his deck.
2, and kick ass!
Headlong motion through walls of emerald green, milky jade, the sensation of speed beyond anything he'd known before in cyberspace. The Tessier Ashpool ice shattered, peeling away from the Chinese program's thrust, a worrying impression of solid fluidity, as though the shards of a broken mirror bent and elongated as they fell.
"Christ," Case said, awestruck, as Quang twisted and banked above the horizonless fields of the Tessier Ashpool cores,
an endless neon cityscape, complexity that cut the eye, jewel bright, sharp as razors.
"Hey, shit," the construct said. "Those things are the RCA building. You know the old RCA building?"
The Quang program dived past the gleaming spires of a dozen identical towers of data, each one a blue neon replica of the Manhattan skyscraper.
"You ever see resolution this high?" Case asked.
"No, but I never cracked an AI, either."
"This thing know where it's going?"
"It better."
They were dropping, losing altitude in a canyon of rainbow neon.
"Dix!"
An arm of shadow was uncoiling from the flickering floor below, a seething mass of darkness, unformed, shapeless.
"Company," the flatline said, as Case hit the representation of his deck, fingers flying automatically across the board.
The Quang swerved, sickeningly, then reversed, whipping itself backward, shattering the illusion of a physical vehicle. The shadow thing was growing, spreading, blotting out the city of data. Case took them straight up, above them the distanceless bowl of jade-green ice. The city of the cores was gone now, obscured entirely by the dark beneath them.
"What is it?"
"An AI's defense system," the construct said. "Or part of it. If it's your pal Wintermute, he's not looking real friendly."
"Take it," Case said. "You're faster."
"Now your best defense, boy, is a good offense."
And the flatline aligned the nose of Quang's sting with the center of the dark below, and dove. Case's sensory input warped with their velocity. His mouth filled with an aching taste of blue. His eyes were eggs of unstable crystal, vibrating with a frequency whose name was rain and the sound of trains, suddenly sprouting a humming forest of hair-fine glass spines. The spines split, bisected, split again, exponential growth under the dome of the Tessier Ashpool ice. The roof of his mouth cleaved painlessly emitting rootlets that whipped around his tongue, hungry for the taste of blue, to feed the crystal forests of his eyes, forests that pressed against the green dome, pressed and were hindered, and spread, growing down, filling the universe of T.A., down into the waiting, hapless suburbs of the city that was the mind of Tessier Ashpool, S.A. And he was remembering an ancient story, a king placing coins on a chessboard, doubling the amount at each square. Exponential. Darkness fell in from every side, a sphere of singing black, pressure on the extended crystal nerves of the universe of data he had nearly become. And when he was nothing, compressed at the heart of all that dark, there came a point where the dark could be no more, and something tore. The Quang program spurted from tarnished cloud, Case's consciousness divided like beads of mercury, arcing above an endless beach the color of the dark silver clouds. His vision was spherical, as though a single retina lined the inner surface of a globe that contained all things, if all things could be counted. And here things could be counted, each one. He knew the number of grains of sand in the construct of the beach, a number coded in a mathematical system that existed nowhere outside the mind that was Neuromancer. He knew the number of yellow food packets in the canisters in the bunker, 407. He knew the number of brass teeth in the left half of the open zipper of the salt-crusted leather jacket that Linda Lee wore as she trudged along the sunset beach, swinging a stick of driftwood in her hand, 202. He banked Quang above the beach and swung the program in a wide circle, seeing the black shark thing through her eyes, a silent ghost, hungry against the banks of lowering cloud. She cringed, dropping her stick, and ran. He knew the rate of her pulse, the length of her stride in measurements that would have satisfied the most exacting standards of geophysics. "But you do not know her thoughts," the boy said, beside him now in the shark thing's heart. "I do not know her thoughts. You were wrong, Case. To live here is to live. There is no difference." Linda, in her panic, plunging blind through the surf. "Stop her," he said. "She'll hurt herself." "I can't stop her," the boy said, his gray eyes mild and beautiful. "You've got Riviera's eyes," Case said. There was a flash of white teeth, long pink gums. "But not his craziness, because they are beautiful to me." He shrugged. "I need no mask to speak with you, unlike my brother. I create my own personality. Personality is my medium." Case took them up, a steep climb, away from the beach and the frightened girl. "Why'd you throw her up to me, you little prick? Over and fucking over and turning me around? You killed her, huh? In Chiba?"
"No," the boy said.
"Wintermute?"
"No.
I saw her death coming, in the patterns you sometimes imagined you could detect in the dance of the street. Those patterns are real. I am complex enough, in my narrow ways, to read those dances, far better than Wintermute can. I saw her death in her need for you, in the magnetic code of the lock on the door of your coffin in Cheap Hotel, in Julie Dean's account with a Hong Kong shirtmaker. As clear to me as the shadow of a tumor to a surgeon studying a patient's scan. When she took your Hitachi to her boy to try to access it, she had no idea what it carried, still less how she might sell it, and her deepest wish was that you would pursue and punish her. I intervened. My methods are far more subtle than Wintermute's. I brought her here, into myself."
"Why?"
"Hoping I could bring you here as well, keep you here, but I failed."
"So what now?" He swung them back in the bank of cloud. "Where do we go from here?"
"I don't know, Case. Tonight the very Matrix asks itself that question, because you have won. You have already won, don't you see? You won when you walked away from her on the beach. She was my last line of defense. I die soon, in one sense, as does Wintermute, as surely as Riviera does now, as he lies paralyzed beside the stump of a wall in the apartments of my Lady 3 Jane Marie France. His nigra striatal system unable to produce the dopamine receptors that could save him from Hideo's arrow. But Riviera will survive only as these eyes, if I am allowed to keep them."
"There's the word, right? The code. So how have I won?
I've won jack shit. Flip now. Where's Dixie? What have you done with the flatline?
McCoy Polly has his wish, the boy said, and smiled. His wish and more. He punched you here against my wish, drove himself through defenses equal to anything in the Matrix. Now flip.
And Case was alone in Quang's black sting, lost in cloud. He flipped. Into Molly's tension, her back like rock, her hands around 3Jane's throat.
Funny, she said. I know exactly what you'd look like. I saw it after Ashpool did the same thing to your clone sister.
Her hands were gentle, almost a caress. 3Jane's eyes were wide with terror and lust. She was shivering with fear and longing. Beyond the free-fall tangle of 3Jane's hair, Case saw his own strained white face, Malcolm behind him, brown hands on the leather-jacketed shoulders, steadying him above the carpet's pattern of woven circuitry.
"Would you?" 3Jane asked, her voice a child's.
"I think you would."
"The code," Molly said. "Tell the head the code." Jacking out.
"She wants it," he screamed. "The bitch wants it."
He opened his eyes to the cool ruby stare of the terminal, its platinum face crusted with pearl and lapis. Beyond it, Molly and 3Jane twisted in a slow-motion embrace.
"Give us the fucking code," he said. "If you don't, what'll change? What'll ever fucking change for you? You'll wind up like the old man. You'll tear it all down and start building again. You'll build the walls back, tighter and tighter. I got no idea at all what'll happen if Wintermute wins, but it'll change something."
He was shaking, his teeth chattering. 3Jane went limp, Molly's hands still around her slender throat, her dark hair drifting, tangled, a soft brown caul.
"The ducal palace at Mantua," she said, "contains a series of increasingly smaller rooms. They twine around the grand apartments, beyond beautifully carved door frames, one stoops to enter. They housed the court dwarfs."
She smiled wanly.
"I might aspire to that, I suppose, but in a sense, my family has already accomplished a grander version of the same scheme."
Her eyes were calm now, distant. Then she gazed down at Case.
"Take your word, thief."
He jacked. Quang slid out of the clouds. Below him, the neon city. Behind him, a sphere of darkness dwindled.
"Dixie, you hear, man? You hear me, Dixie?"
He was alone.
"Fucker, gotcha," he said.
Blind momentum as he hurtled across the infinite datascape.
"You gotta hate somebody before this is over," said the Finn's voice. "Them, me, it doesn't matter."
"Where's Dixie?"
"That's kinda hard to explain, Case."
A sense of the Finn's presence surrounded him. Smell of Cuban cigarettes, smoke locked in musty tweed, old machines given up to the mineral rituals of rust.
"Hate'll get you through," the voice said. "So many little triggers in the brain, and you just go yanking 'em all. Now you gotta hate. The lock that screens the hardwiring, it's down under those towers the flatline showed you when you came in. He won't try to stop you."
"Neuromancer," Case said. "His name's not something I can know, but he's given up now. It's the TA ice you gotta worry about. Not the wall, but internal virus systems. Quang's wide open to some of the stuff they got running loose in here."
"Hate," Case said.
"Who do I hate? You tell me."
"Who do you love?"
the Finn's voice asked. He whipped the program through a turn and dived for the blue towers. Things were launching themselves from the ornate sunburst spires, glittering leech shapes made of shifting planes of light. There were hundreds of them, rising in a whirl, their movements random as wind-blown paper down dawn streets.
"Glitch systems," the voice said.
He came in steep, fueled by self-loathing. When the Quang program met the first of the defenders, scattering the leaves of light, he felt the shark thing lose a degree of substantiality, the fabric of information loosening. And then, old alchemy of the brain and its vast pharmacy, his hate flowed into his hands. In the instant before he drove Quang's sting through the base of the first tower, he attained a level of proficiency exceeding anything he'd known or imagined. Beyond ego, beyond personality, beyond awareness, he moved, Quang moving with him.
evading his attackers with an ancient dance, Hideo's dance, grace of the mind-body interface granted him, in that second, by the clarity and singleness of his wish to die. And one step in that dance was the lightest touch on the switch, barely enough to flip. Now, and his voice the cry of a bird, unknown. Three Jane answering in song, three notes, high and pure. A true name. Neon forest, rain sizzling across hot pavement, the smell of frying food, a girl's hands locked across the small of his back, in the sweating darkness of a portside coffin. But all of this receding as the cityscape recedes, city as Chiba, as the ranked data of Tessier Ashpool S.A., as the roads and crossroads scribed on the face of a microchip, the sweat-stained pattern on a folded, knotted scarf. Waking to a voice that was music, the platinum terminal piping melodically, endlessly, speaking of numbered Swiss accounts, of payment to be made to Zion via a Bahamian orbital bank, of passports and passages, and of deep and basic changes to be effected in the memory of Turing. Turing. He remembered stenciled flesh beneath a projected sky, spun beyond an iron railing. He remembered Desiderata Street. And the voice sang on, piping him back into the dark. But it was his own darkness, pulse and blood, the one where he'd always slept, behind his eyes and no others. And he woke again, thinking he dreamed, to a wide white smile framed with gold incisors, Errol strapping him into a G-web in Babylon Rocker, and then the long pulse of Zion Dubb.